actually, this is that's a good idea because then we can kind of just preview like a like what your app like an appetizer. You know what I mean? And then we'll. Go
I was
going to
say wet your whistle. Yeah.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 151 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm a native New Englander still trying to recover from that horrific Gordon Hayward injury the other night in the Celtics opener. You can't unsee it. It's one of those things. You know what I mean? I think I'm still recovering. And we're going to get through it, guys. We're going to work through it together. If you're not a Celtics fan, that's okay. But hey, we've got a great show for you tonight. We are going to break down the AL and NL only valuations, hit on some early 2018 thoughts, and answer your Twitter mailbag questions as well. Here to help me break it all down are two of BP's finest. First up, we have our in-house valuations wizard, our Philadelphia insider. He's got Joel Embiid fever. He is Mike Gianella. What's going on, Mike?
I'm glad you brought up the Sixers because, yeah, I don't really care much one way or the other about Boston sports, and I am a Sixers bandwagoner, so hi.
Embiid looks pretty good so far. You got that going for you. He looks so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still think this is a developmental year. Some people here are saying that the Sixers are going to like win 50-plus games, and I'm like, nah, it's probably more like a 500 team.
Well, at least the team's fun to watch. So making his triumphant return to the pod, my free agent watch partner in crime, he's the only Cleveland Indians fan in Southern California. He's still recovering, folks, after that tough loss to the Yankees there. He is Mark Barry. What's going on, buddy? Great to have you back on the show.
Hey guys. Yeah, I'm not quite all the way back yet, but at least Mike, it was supposed to be a rebuilding year for the Indians too. I'm sorry, the Yankees too. So, you know, maybe the Sixers can pull off something similar.
It's possible. It's just harder with basketball. Like baseball, I feel like it's easier for younger players to coalesce. And, you know, the Sixers have two guys in Simmons, and, you know, they have two players and Fultz who they really hadn't even played yet, so we'll see. I mean, I hope so. It's definitely great to be in Philadelphia and one of the teams is winning.
Yeah, that's cool. I guess I was taking a shot more at Yankee people because I am not buying into the rebuilding year for the Yankees. They're pretty good all year, and they're winning the playoffs, and I'm still not over the Indians' loss, so that's why I'm a little bitter about the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was playing with them too, and I'm a Met fan, Yankee hater, and you know it's abated as an adult, but I still do not and cannot root for the Yankees in the postseason.
I know this may be a controversial take, but I feel like this is one of the more likable Yankee teams, just because of the young guys and like CC Sabathia, like he's kind of a lovable veteran kind of guy. I don't know. I like Sanchez and Judge, and you know I think what you were trying to say, Mark, is that Joel Embiid is the Aaron Judge of basketball. Is that what you were trying to say earlier?
Yeah, that's 100%. You took the words right out of my mouth.
I'm going to quote you on that in the transcription. So,
yep.
All right, here we go. This is the first official podcast of the 2018 offseason. Guys, we made it. I can't believe it. A whole season in the books. We're starting the offseason recording this on Thursday night. Game 5 of the NLCS is going on right now. The Dodgers trying to punch their ticket to the World Series. So we got that going on in the background. And if you're a longtime listener, hey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening. It's been a fun ride. Myself, Brett, and Mike, we've been doing this for a couple of years now. And you know, if you've been with us through this journey, thanks for being here, and we hope you keep listening. For those of you who are new to the show, we get that a lot during the off season. a whole bunch of new listeners come in. So if you're new, I mean, thanks for listening, first of all, and a little bit about us. We're a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy podcast that focuses primarily on redraft formats. We do hit on some relevant dynasty topics like potential call-ups and rookies and things of that nature. But if you're looking for more of a true dynasty podcast, I'd recommend the Tino podcast. So go there. They're a little wild. They can get rowdy, but that's definitely where you want to be. So before we dive into our main topic, I know I teased it earlier with the AL and NL only valuations. We're going to whet your appetite with that content. I know I'm rambling here, but we do have some brief housekeeping stuff. Starting off with the new website. Baseball Prospectus has a new website. I don't know, have you guys gone and checked it out? Because it was kind of a shock to the system the first time I saw it. It's really cool.
I was offline, off the grid this over the weekend, and just randomly kind of saw stuff about it and pulled it up, and was just, my mind was blown because I didn't really know it was coming. And when I saw it, it just looks great. And it's, I can't say enough good things about it. It looks modern. It's easy to navigate. Two thumbs up.
Definitely better. Mike, it's the, it must've been a little bit of a, I don't know. What's the word I'm searching for? The website was older than you, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it just, well, nothing's as old as I am, George, but it was as old as many of the lovable 80s and 90s references that I like to make on this show, you know, speaking of new listeners. Yeah, no, I actually got to beta test it. Brett Sayre, our managing editor and, you know, lord of everything, let me do some of that on the fantasy side. And, you know, I was blown away. I was like, wow, this is really... Because people have talked for years about how old the site is and, you know, made those jokes about how it's like GeoCities and it's this awful site. And you could hear the, you know, noise when you log into it. So it's finally great to be in the 21st century. There are a couple of minor bugs that still need to be worked out. But the look and feel of it is terrific.
It is a massive upgrade, and it's one of the reasons you should subscribe. You can do that with a one-year premium membership. That's how you can read all of our content. We're publishing stuff right now during the playoffs. We're doing a lot of retrospective pieces, player profiles, and we'll have all that content going through the rest of the playoffs. And then once we hit the new year, we're going to kick off our off-season coverage. We do a lot of interesting stuff, but mostly our position previews. I think if you play fantasy, I mean, that's where you get your money's worth. With all of our content. So make sure you go subscribe to that. We're going to be doing a cool thing as well. I want to plug it really quickly. We're going to be doing a 2018 Top 50 mock draft. We're just building in the concept, and we're going to get that going. But the entire fantasy team pretty much is going to be doing that in the next couple of weeks. So that's going to be fun if you're looking ahead to next season already. And yeah, I don't think there's anything else for us. You can follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Mark is at Hoodie and Tie, all one word. And I am at George Bissell. So that's the best way to get in touch with us. And to everyone who sent in a Twitter question for the show tonight, we're going to get to those at the end. So let's, without any further delay, I know that was kind of a long intro here, guys, but I want to kind of set the table here. And let's dive into our main topic. We're going to start with the American League. And we'll begin on the hitter side. And maybe the best way, Mike, to start us off, and this is something we do pretty much every year when we start to talk about valuations, but can you take us through the process of how you compile these, some important things to remember with those, and how fantasy owners should just generally look at these and use valuations?
Okay, well, first of all, these are different from Pecota and the PFM on the site. And the biggest difference in what I do and what the PFM does, these are SGP based as opposed to Z-scores, which I know is a very technical way to start this. But the less technical way to explain it is this spins off of what auctions do in only leagues, as opposed to spinning off of the entire player pool. So what it's an exercise, and it's telling you the players, and you'll see this when this is published next month, the players who are listed under the draft column with an X, that's how the valuation is derived, and that's the baseline. So those players will add up to a grand total of $3,120 per league, which assumes a 12-team league for AL and NL only, which already is kind of out there for some people. Even some of the only people I know now play 10-team leagues because they feel like 12-team is too deep. But that was always the traditional way it was done, and that's still the way the expert leagues do it. The other thing to keep in mind is that where some formulas use a scarcity model, and so players who save games or players who steal bases are valued very, very highly. What my system does is it models, it scales those players down a little bit. So steals are certainly, you know, valued and worth a lot. You know, for example, Whit Merrifield, just to kind of kick off with him, he's the fifth highest player or valued hitter in AL only. But believe it or not, a system that was valuing steals more, he would actually be higher. There's some better examples than the National League, like Billy Hamilton and Dee Gordon. That skew especially happens even more with saves. You know, if you have a pitcher who has a lot of saves, even in a 5x5, they tend to skew upward a lot. So with this, the idea behind these valuations and what they're trying to do is they're trying to give you a rough idea of what these players were worth relative to auctions and what people pay for them. And that's part of the reason that it's designed this way. You know, it's kind of the idea of like, look, well, theoretically, you know, Kenley Jansen, or I'll use Craig Kimbrell since we start with the American League, like Craig Kimbrell might be worth $40 in theory in an AL only. But in practice, since there's no way in hell you're ever going to pay $40 for Craig Kimbrell in an only, these valuations try to balance that and say, well, you know, look, we know the power of those saves, but we're trying to scale down a little bit and, you know, recognize the reality that at some point, you know, those saves in and of themselves, first of all, become worthless, but second of all, that there's just, you know, if you go out and buy a team with 160 saves or 200 stolen bases, yeah, you might have a lot of value, and I'm making air quotes, you know, which you can't see. This is a podcast, but you're not going to win your league.
you just hit on it there, but that you kind of teed up my big point here, and there's a lot to unpack there. Obviously, you could probably rewind and go listen to that again because there's a lot there, Mike. But I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, you're kind of a valuations junkie already. It's an integral part of your process as a fantasy owner, and what you just touched on in terms of roster construction, I think that's the big thing. Like you said, you can't just go out and say, well, all the steals guys are worth, you know, the baseline is going to be $25 for a guy who steals a bunch of bases. So I'm going to just build my team with a bunch of those guys. And I'm going to have more value than anyone else. And that's not the right application for valuations. You still have to adhere to your league scoring and the roster and how you build the team. You can't neglect categories and just load up on one area. So that's just something to keep in mind. And obviously, Mike and Brett's done this in the past, but you put it a lot more eloquently than I have. But Mark, I'll turn to you. How do you generally just use valuations, and how does that play into your process as a fantasy owner?
Well, kind of piggybacking off what you just said, it's always nice to look at the end of the season and see how much value you got from the guys you drafted, but you can have the most valuable team and have and come in last place, like in theory, just based on how you disperse that. So it's important, I think, to take these valuations and build that balance and try and come up with a little bit of, you know, pieces everywhere. See the guys that you think you might be able to pick up around the edges. Whit Merrifield, just like we all expected, was one of the most valuable players in the league, but you maybe wouldn't have known it out of him, but maybe the second base position in Kansas City you could have targeted as a spot where you could get some production. It's just one of those where you have to kind of take everything into consideration, and you have to go for that balance as opposed to just trying to get the overarching value at the end of the year.
All right, so there's a little bit of the strategic side of valuations. Let's talk about some players. Obviously, Jose Altuve was the number one earner in the American League. And I think Mike Trout, if he had played more, if he hadn't gotten hurt, I think he actually probably would have been the top earner. But Altuve, Mike, we've made this point a lot. He's pretty much been the number one guy in AL only for a couple of years now. And that's because not only is he giving you 30-plus steals, but he's also hitting 20 home runs, and the runs scored and the RBI are there. I mean, at this point, Altuve is just, like, the GOAT in American League only right now. Aside from Trout, like, he's a god.
So to back up a step, you know, just to do a rough back of the napkin, if you gave Mike Trout 650 at bats, he would have earned $49, or, you know, that's what he was on pace to earn. So yeah, Mike Trout at bat for at bat, or plate appearance for plate appearance, was a god this year. You know, it's
yes, he was.
Yeah, people are gonna forget that, but he's ridiculous. But yeah, Altuve is somebody who he's earned at least 39 in AL only for the last 4 years. Three of those 4 years he's cracked 40, which is really hard to do. And I think people, this was finally a year in labor. You know, I don't know if you remember, George, when I talked about, you know, going out there from the AL for the first time.
Oh, I remember.
I had the strategy where I was going to get Altuve, and I was like, you know what, I'll bid 42, 43. People don't pay that much for him. He's underrated. And he went for 45. So this feels like the year that people finally recognize Altuve for that power that he has to contribute across all four categories. And the other point I'll make about him, it's that batting average. You know, people underestimate what the power that a 346 batting average can have on your team. But having a guy like that allows you to draft one or two players where you just don't care what they do in batting average. And you know, to Mark's point earlier, if it's a guy who hits like 40 home runs but has a bad average, or, you know, someone who has a broad base of skills but is a 240 hitter, you can kind of take the hit, whereas you can't really do that with nearly any other player, you know, in the American League. You know, just eyeballing it, I think Eric Hosmer was the second most valuable player, and actually that's not correct. He was the third most valuable player in batting average. It was, believe it or not, it was Abisail Garcia was the second most valuable player in batting average, but, you know, he just wasn't close to what Altuve provided there.
Singles machine, Abisail Garcia. Mark, where do we go from here with Jose Ramirez? I think when we talked about him in the offseason, and we had a number of guests who came on the show, and I think Brett and Mike and I, we all really liked Jose Ramirez and said, well, he's going to contribute across five categories, and that's more valuable than you think. But he definitely surpassed everyone's expectations. I mean, he flirted with 30 home runs, nearly got to 20 steals, and hit 318. Where do we go from here with Ramirez? Because he feels to me like a guy who people are going to pay the sticker price for in the early rounds next year, and I just worry that we saw the peak season already. Do you get that sense with him, or what are you thinking about with Ramirez right now?
Well, I do think watching a lot of Ramirez this season, I do think this is probably the peak season, and just because it was really, really good, and I would have a hard time thinking that anybody could put up this kind of season twice. It does seem like a concerted effort just based on the team. And you got into this earlier in the season with Francisco Lindor of hitting more fly balls, trying to hit more home runs. Jose Ramirez either led the league or was close in extra base hits. And he had just like all of the doubles, I think.
he had like 50, didn't he?
Yeah. And he doesn't, like, he doesn't walk a ton, but he barely ever strikes out. He strikes out under 11%. And while I don't really see him hitting 318 with almost 30 home runs next year, he could be right around 300 and, you know, 20 home runs. Like, he's really good. And while I don't necessarily see this, I see this season as maybe the peak. He could settle in maybe a notch or two below and still be really good. It just depends, just like anyone else, how what price you can get him.
Yeah, I think
during the draft season,
I think you're right that the floor is still going to be insanely high, but I feel like people are going to pay for the ceiling up front, and that's where I think we run into trouble in fantasy sometimes. So, just something to be cognizant of, and I think you laid it out pretty good in terms of a way to approach Ramirez this offseason. So to recap, Altuve was the top earner. Aaron Judge was second. We're going to talk a lot about Aaron Judge this offseason, so I'm going to table that discussion for now. I'm sure we're going to discuss him with every single guest we have on the offseason too. Jose Ramirez was third. We talked about Whit Merrifield. He finished fifth. Mike Trout was sixth. Eric Hosmer, the aforementioned free agent to be, so we'll bring him up again later this offseason. He was up there as well in the top 10. Mookie Betts and Justin Upton right up there as well, rounding out the top 10. I love both of those guys, obviously, so I won't dive into them now, but I do want to talk about Mike Elvis Andrews of the Rangers. He had the strangest year I've seen in a while, and well, let's put it this way. He had 20 home runs this year. In his previous two seasons, he had 8 home runs and 7 home runs. Here's what I want to ask you about, though. Not about the power, but we sort of know what the baseline is for Elvis Andrews because he's pretty much a 300 hitter who's going to steal 20 to 25 bases. And that's where the value of having a number like this based on valuations comes in. So where do we set the floor with Andrews if we just throw the power out for a second? I mean, do we have a good idea of how much you should pay for him next year as the floor?
Well, you know, as a general rule of thumb, what I kind of like to do – so here's the funny thing about Andrews. Andrews is a player who every year before this year I always had in a league because people underestimated him because he didn't hit for power. Like he barely hit home runs, but otherwise he was this reliable guy who, you know, he hit about 260 or 270. He stole a bunch of bases. You know, when I say I had him everywhere, you know, I generally play in 15-team mixer deeper. Like, I wasn't saying I had him in a, you know, vanilla mixer. But he was somebody I had because, like, yeah, those steals are great. You know, he scores a bunch of runs. He's in a good lineup. He drives in some runs. He does enough of everything. You just look at the home runs and you kind of shrug. So the way I look at him for 2018, do I think he's going to hit 20 home runs again? No. Now, this is a longer conversation about what's happening with the baseballs and, you know, are they going to be juiced again? Because we know they're juiced. Like we all know that there's something going on there. And, you know, it's not just the fact that hitters decide in 2017 to magically start changing the angle of their bats. So
you sure about that? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Pretty sure. But so with Andrews, if you look at him and you look, you think, well, you know, 12 to 15 home runs, you know, 20 to 25 steals, I think it's those steals that really make him valuable. And this goes back to that context that we were talking about, which is, you know, so many players now are going to hit 25, 30 home runs. If he slips, but he's still in double digits and he finishes with those 25 steals, he's got a lot of value. I'd say the baseline in an AL only for me on the low end is going to be about $24. I might go higher, you know, and this is when I sit down and really pour every player and do the analysis, which I haven't done yet. But just eyeballing it, that's kind of what I'm thinking with him. And, you know, I might go higher. I might look at his numbers and go, you know what? There's enough there where maybe he won't hit 12 home runs. Maybe he'll hit 15. I think it's sustainable.
Yeah, we're still crazy early in the offseason where we haven't dug into, like, batted ball profiles and projections for next year where we can build the core of our draft strategy and our bid limits for next year. So we're still way too early to be talking about that. But I think it is important to look at Andrews. Like, if you're going to look at the valuations when they go up at BP, you know, next month coming up, Andrews is a guy who earned $31. And that's a crazy figure. And I just think the floor is a lot lower if you take out the power. But so it's just something to consider. Here, we'll close out the American League hitters by doing this. 10 seconds or less lightning round. Who's a name that surprised you the most for an American League hitter and why? You've got 10 seconds or less to answer, and I'll start with you, Mark.
I would say Abisail Garcia. We talked about him earlier, and I'm very surprised because I've watched him play baseball before and did not expect under any circumstances that he would be worth $25 in a season.
Interesting. Mike, who you got?
I mentioned him before. How do you not go with Whit Merrifield? He earned $31. And, you know, to offer some context, he was, you know, went for $2, $2, and a dollar in the three expert leagues. Nobody saw this coming. And everybody, you know, including Brett, thought Raul Mondesi Jr. was going to run with that job.
My guy is going to be Steven Souza Jr. because you're going to look at his surface stats and go, wow, he hit 30 home runs and he stole 16 bases. But he was barely a top 40 hitter in the American League, which is bananas because he batted .239. The runs and RBIs were just not really there. So Souza, I just think that shows you the value of batting average in the current climate right now, that you could have a guy who goes nearly 30-20 and just not be all that valuable. So just something to think about. American League pitchers, let's shift over there. This is always tough group because just the last couple of years, the top has been really good, and then there's just nothing. It's it falls off the table. So you have the names you would expect at the top. Your top five, we'll roll through them really quickly. Kluber, Sale, Luis Severino, Carlos Carrasco, Craig Kimbrell, Justin Verlander's there, and then it's kind of a bunch of relievers and some more starters. But, oh, man, Corey Kluber earned $44, Mike. I mean, that's a crazy, crazy number for a pitcher.
Yeah, well,
in and only.
I mean, it's especially crazy when you consider that he how bad he was or below average he was when he was battling that back injury. You know, if you look back on this season, people are not going to remember that he was mediocre. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was not good. And then he went on the DL for like, what, like two and a half weeks. And he just, you know, Chris Sale at that point looked like the runaway Cy Young Award winner. And, you know, if you predicted on May 15th that it'd be Kluber, people would be like, yeah, like he's going to have to put up like a one or a 1.5 to do that. And he didn't put up a one, but he was incredible down the stretch and really for like 3 or 4 months.
Chris Sale earned $40 as well, and then there's a huge drop off just because of the I think the volume of innings and just the level of performance there. Luis Severino was next at $31, Carlos Carrasco at $30. I'm interested, Mark, in your thoughts here on Carrasco and Verlander, because it feels to me like the issue for those guys is going to be durability going forward. What would you say on a scale of 1 to 10, the odds that they repeat as top five starters in the American League next year?
I think I could see it for Verlander more, just because I'm a little bit more confident in his ability to throw the innings. I think the knock on Carrasco heading into pretty much every season was, yeah, but when has he ever thrown 200 innings? He did it this year. So does that mean this is who he is from now on, or is he going to go back to throwing, you know, 165 to 180 from here on out? With Verlander, at least he has a little bit longer of a track record. Like, we could get into how playoff innings factor into a guy's workload and how they rebound from that in the following season, but that's a different topic of conversation. I just have a little bit more faith in Verlander to hold up for the duration of 2018. Not that I think Carrasco will be bad, but I don't necessarily know if he'll be a top five guy.
Plus team context too, right? He's staying in Houston, so opportunities for wins, pretty favorable parks on the whole in that division outside of Houston. So yeah, I'm with you on Verlander. I feel like he's going to be a pretty good bargain because people are going to play up the track record and the miles, and he might come in at a pretty good number next year. Mike, my dude, Big Maple, everyone's favorite. If you're new to the show, my love affair with James Paxton has been well documented. I'm not the only one in the industry who likes him, just for the record, but he's a pretty good pitcher when he pitches. I mean, that's no longer a debate anymore, but like, where are we comfortable valuing him going forward?
Well, you know, this kind of dovetails into a point you alluded to earlier that I don't want to just dismiss. So, you know, you mentioned that there's Kluber, there's Sale, and, you know, Carrasco, Verlander, and a bunch of, you know, other starters and relievers. Mm. So something to kind of keep in mind, 5 years ago in 2012, there were 31 pitchers in the majors, not the American League, who threw 200 or more innings. This year it was 15. You know, we're really at a point, you know, we're going to reach a point where the 200 inning pitcher is a rarity, if not an impossibility. So once upon a time, I would have looked at Paxton and those 136 innings and went, you know what? I don't really want him. I don't really like, that's not enough. There's too much risk. Now I look at him like, you know what? I'll take those great innings from him as opposed to 170 mediocre innings from, I'm just scanning down the list here, and I'm going to let, you know, find a name to laugh at. Yeah, Rick Porcello's
well, like
too
Jason
obvious.
Vargas. Like, Jason Vargas is a good name. He threw 180 innings, and he had a run where he was good, but the rest of the time, he was just kind of pedestrian. And with James Paxton, at least you know when he's pitching, he's going to perform, and you know when he's out, he's out. You don't have to worry about him getting lit up for 8 runs and being inconsistent for 3 weeks. You know what I mean?
You know, what's really telling when you scan down this list, you know, Mark and George, and when this comes out next month, do this. like just do a page down on the pitchers and look at how few innings, like as you go page by page, these guys have. It's unbelievable to me how few pitchers, you know, forget 200 innings, like how few pitchers are even qualifying for the ERA title. You know, I forget the number, but that was another one. 5 years ago, 88 pitchers qualified for, you know, 160 innings. I believe this year, again, that's a majors. I believe this year it was 58. I have to go look at, but that's pretty close. So, yeah, to get back to Paxton, I'm going to discount him a little bit because, you know, I get it. Like, he could pitch 80 or 90 innings as opposed to 136. I don't have a problem paying at least 20 for him, though. He earned 22 last year. And that might sound conservative, but when you're paying 20 for a pitcher and an only, that to me is like kind of the tail end of elite. Like, 12 pitchers cracked that barrier in 2017, and that includes the relievers.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me a little bit of the Rich Hill conundrum for a couple of years ago. Mm. Like, he's not going to give you a ton of innings or as many innings as you would think from an elite pitcher, but George, like you said, the innings will be good. He only threw 136 innings, like we just said, and he was the seventh most valuable starter in the American League. Like, that seems crazy. Like, you just pay because you know he's going to be good, and you just hope that it's more than less, I guess.
The guy that that fits that sort of mold of what you guys are talking about, Brad Peacock, I mean, he only goes about five innings a start, but he's punching out, you know, eight or nine guys and giving you, you know, three earned runs or less pretty much every time out. And that doesn't seem that valuable, but he was pretty much a top 10 pitcher in the American League this year. So Peacock, Charlie Morton, those kinds of guys, even to a lesser extent, like Chad Green, he's basically a starting pitcher almost, going multiple innings. Yusmeiro Petit, too. Like, there are guys, Mike Clevinger, there's a bunch of guys who kind of fit this, you know, five innings, they don't get the third time through the order, they get lifted. They still provide a lot of value, so that's, you guys are right. That's kind of the direction I see it going, and that's a real good, good point to make. Any other stuff on the American League side here? I mean, we kind of hit on. We'll do the 10 seconds or less here. Mark, who's a guy for you that stands out on this list?
I think, and not to just talk about guys that we've talked about already, but you just touched on Chad Green. I think that's going to be a really interesting development moving forward. Just between last offseason, where the reliever revolution seemed to get the most press, and you could already see it. You can't do it during the entire regular season, but you could see guys being stretched out, whether it was Chris Devensky or Chad Green or guys like that. And I think that's going to be a really interesting niche to go into for fantasy, to get those guys that can throw two innings at a time and just strike everybody out.
Mike, who's your guy?
I'm really fascinated to see what Dylan Bundy does in 2018. He was like two different pitchers. You know, he faded down the stretch. He had a minor injury where they sat him the last week, which did not help me in the leagues I had him. But he was a pitcher when he was on. You know, he wasn't Paxton-esque, obviously, but I could see him being a second-tier guy. And he still feels like somebody to me because of that 4.24 ERA and because he only struck out 152 batters, could still fly under the radar in 2018.
The guy for me is David Price. He was outside the top 60 pitchers in the American League this year, but that's because he only threw 74 innings. I mean, if you saw him in the playoffs, he looked good. And it sounds like Eduardo Rodriguez is out to start the year. The rest of that rotation, I mean, they had Doug Fister getting the ball every fifth day. David Price is going to get starts next year, and I think the numbers are just not going to look that attractive. And a lot of people are just not going to want him because of the injury. But I think he's going to end up as a guy who's a pretty good bargain and kind of a throwback dude who could give you 200 innings if his elbow is fine. So we'll see on David Price. I think he's an interesting guy to monitor this offseason. Let's move to the National League here, guys. And we'll start with the hitters. There it is. Okay. I was just making sure the spreadsheet was right because it looked a little odd. It looked odd because Tommy Pham was near the top of it, and I figure that out.
Do you have it?
What
sorted,
the hell?
Do you know it? It might look odd. Do you have it sorted by on base percentage? Because if you do, Votto's at the top, and that's
yeah, that's why
I had it sorted that way because of Tout. So okay, it might be a little bit different. I mean, it's not that different. Like, you got Votto at the top, and there's a couple other, you know, variations, but really, it's not a huge thing.
I would imagine that Votto is at the top of several lists, so it looks right,
you know,
nonetheless.
I'm kind of glad we segued to this just for a second. So I know most leagues don't do, you know, OBP, but Votto is such an extreme example. Like, he's a sixth best hitter in like standard 5x5 that uses batting average, you know, at $32, which is really good. You know, you use him in OBP and he's a king. Like, he's a $42 hitter, and, you know, Paul Goldschmidt's second at 40. He is such something I like about OBP leagues. Like, when Tout Wars started that, I believe in 2013, I hated it just because it was new and it was something to learn. I really appreciate that OBP kind of takes, you know, the walks and what a hitter like Votto does in that aspect and values it properly.
Yeah, Justin Turner,
that's my
too.
Yeah, so that's why I pitched for OBP, you know, and we can go on with our lives now.
I like OBP better. I mean, it just takes into account the full scope of a hitter's contributions, because if you have a guy like Votto who walks 100 times in a standard league, he doesn't get credit for that. But
you got to hope he scores. Well, you got to hope he scores a run.
Yep.
And otherwise, you're just not getting anything for the walk.
That's just I don't like that. I like OBP. If you play average only, we can't be friends. but that's the standard game, so we're gonna talk about it. Charlie Blackmon was number one. I guess D. Gordon was number two. And Mike, we should probably have our discussion about stolen bases here. But D. Gordon, can you make the case that he's probably the safest investment in the National League at this point, other than Trey Turner?
I mean...
Trey Turner is a fun topic,
you know,
if you want to go there.
Well, you know, you know what? I would actually say, if you want to talk about a safe investment, I know his average was down this year. I like Paul Goldschmidt. He's proven that that the steals fluctuate, but he's going to steal some bases. You know, the power is going to be there. You know, in that lineup, he's going to score runs, he's going to drive in runs. But Gordon's close, and the thing about Gordon is, if you make that investment, particularly in an only where you've got to spend like $30 on him, you better make sure you get your power pretty much everywhere else in the lineup. But yeah, he's an anchor in steals, and, you know, 114 runs, like, that's the thing that jumps out about Gordon. And the thing that jumped out about me about the Marlins in general, the top of that lineup was really good. Like, you know, we know Stanton was good, we know Gordon was good, but
Ozuna.
You look at Ozuna and you even look at Yelich, who, you know, I think people look at him as a disappointment. He earned $25 in NL only. I know in mixed is a different proposition with him, but that's another key about only to mention to the listeners. Guys like Yelich who contribute across the board, even if they aren't great across the board, have a good deal of value.
Yeah, I used to call it the Billy Hamilton gambit, where you know the value of speed, and he's pretty much a lock to return a profit given the league-wide context of steals. I mean, there's no one stealing bases anymore. It just isn't a thing.
I'm sorry to, like, I'm not going to mark much time here, but it's the idea that there's the fear of Gordon, and it's kind of what I alluded to, which is, if I buy Gordon and I spend too much on him, I can't fill out the rest of my offense. But what it comes down to, and this is the nice thing about auction my values, is that if you spend 32 on Gordon and he earns 39, you absolutely can get enough value on offense. It's just how you structure the rest of your offense. And to Mark's point earlier, you do have to be careful. You know, you don't want to buy another steal guy, or, you know, even a quasi steal guy like an Ender Inciarte, for example, or as opposed to buy a Chris Taylor. You might want to make sure you get someone who hits 35 home runs with 5 steals, but it certainly can be done.
Exactly. So Mark, let's talk about Trey Turner here. If he doesn't get hurt, I mean, Mike maybe is the right guy to ask how much he would have earned. I mean, Mike, what do you think he would have earned? Would he have cracked $40 at this point? Because he stole 46 bases. Let's say he gets to 60 if he doesn't miss that much time. He's probably a $40 earner, right?
Yeah, if you do, oh, definitely. I mean, if you do the same back of the napkin calculation I did for Trout, and I mean, let's say you give him 550 at bats, you know, as opposed to 650, which, you know, was generous for Trout, that's $39. So yeah, he gets close at least.
Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say with Turner, like you just look at him and he checks in right next to Billy Hamilton on the valuations, and you look at the numbers side by side, and Turner had like 170 fewer plate appearances, and you think, oh, so this is what it would look like if Billy Hamilton could hit, because it's basically every single category he's doing more in fewer at bats and still only had 13 fewer stolen bases. It's pretty remarkable. Like, he got blown up a lot last offseason into the first round, and it's hard to see that not happening again, just because the promise is there for him to be one of the handful of best players just based on this production and the climate that we're in right now.
I feel like I remember this back when I did when I studied what would you call it? You study the law and you study how prosecutors work. You never ask a question as a prosecutor that you don't know the answer to, and I feel like we're there with Turner. We kind of don't know what the ceiling looks like, so I have a hard time paying. I've seen in the two early mocks that we referenced on the last show, that Justin Mason of Fangraphs and a couple other sites that he's run, I've seen Turner go, I feel like, in the top three sometimes in a snake draft, and he could get there, but I feel like, once again, if you're paying that up front, it doesn't leave you a lot of room for profit, so...
You need everything to go right to take a chance like that, I think. Yeah. And for me personally, I don't foresee getting too many shares of Turner, just because I think there's always going to be someone that is dreaming a little bit bigger than I am. But I can understand the promise, definitely.
Mm-hmm. All right, so rest of the hitters at the top of the rankings. Charlie Blackmon 1, D. Gordon 2, Paul Goldschmidt, Giancarlo Stanton, Nolan Arenado round out the top five. Then it's Joey Votto, Marcelo Ozuna, Tommy Pham, Trey Turner, Billy Hamilton, the rest of the top 10 there. Ender Inciarte is an interesting name just outside the top 10. Then you have, you know, your Harpers and Bryants and Mike, I guess I'll wrap up here with what the hell do we do with Tommy Pham?
Well, you know, I think you have to discount him somewhat, just because the underlying skills are not believable, but this is an example where you can't go crazy with that. And I see some people going too far. The steals, or most of the steals, should be there. You know, the average is what I'm primarily worried about. And I feel like even the Cardinals sour on him, and I keep hearing things of that nature. He's going to play somewhere. So, you know, you're not paying 30 for him, which is what he earned last year. That's a given. I feel like you have to at least go in the low 20s and an only, you know, just because, you know, even if he slips, you know, that's kind of a good rule of thumb. So you're in 30. If you think he's going to slip by a third, I mean, well, you know, makes him a $20 hitter, and I want to go higher than that.
Yeah, that's 30 in an only, by the way. So it's not a mixed value. He's obviously
when we get to mix, that's going to be a whole other discussion.
Right. But just for everyone listening, I mean, that's the context we're referencing the dollar values here. I want to give Brett a little bit of credit, because not only is Anthony Rendon really good, top 20 hitter with kind of a weird year, he still hit 300 with 25 bombs. Andrew McCutchen, he hit the nail on the head there. McCutchen was a $25 earner in only. He hit 280 with 28 home runs, 11 steals. I mean, the reports of his demise preseason were greatly, greatly exaggerated,
well,
I think. And
he was terrible for 6 weeks or so. Remember?
Yeah, but you can't discount these types of talents, I guess, is the point.
Oh
right?
No, he was really good. I'm just saying, as late as May, people were saying he was finished. They wrote him off, and
All right, 10 seconds or less. Mark, you have the honors here. Who are you taking?
I'm excited and intrigued to see what happens with Michael Conforto. I really liked him heading into the season, regardless of whether he was going to have that everyday job. And he pretty much forced Terry's hand. He's not going to have to do that next year. It's all going to come down to how that shoulder injury plays out. But I think he's really good, and he showed it. And it's too bad that he couldn't have finished the season he started.
Mike, who you got?
Well, you know, I'm kind of annoyed that he hit two home runs last night, because Javi Baez, like, you'd think the way people talk about him. And so this is funny. Like, a couple of years ago when Mao was the producer,
oh my goodness,
Brett Mao and I had this, like, 20-minute argument about Baez. And this was 2015. I was like, it's too early. You know, I get the talent, this, that, and the other. I'm on the other end of, and Brett Mao arguing against me, I'm on the other end of the spectrum now. I feel like people are discounting him too much. This is a guy who could hit 30 home runs and steal 15 to 20 bases next year. I know the average is going to fluctuate, but this is a hitter I want. And I know some other people always want him too, but I get the vibe that some people have written him off and look at him like, yeah, you know, he is what he is. Like, he's not that good, you know, and I could go on with all the negativity. He's overrated because of his defense. I mean, am I missing something? The other thing about him, too, is he's 24 years old. Like, I feel like we've gone too far with the Baez hate. And, you know, I wish the 2015 version of me could hear this, but I feel like I'm going to own Javi Baez in a lot of leagues next year.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe this. He's an unbelievable talent who I think the day-to-day consistency isn't there, so it bugs people. Is that maybe the best way to look at it? Because there's just some games he goes 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts.
Yeah.
And you just have to live with it.
And those, yeah. I was going to say,
everyone does that.
Well, yeah. Well, and those games are never going to go away. I mean, this is, you said you're going to talk about Judge later this summer. You know, Aaron Judge is going to strike out 200 times. Like, that's just something that he's going to do. Like, and part of that, too, is Judge next year is probably still going to hit 35 to 40 home runs, because that's what he does, too. And you just have to decide, you know, what that's worth. I think with Baez, some of it, quite honestly, is that flair that he has. And it annoys some people. It really annoys them that they feel like, yeah, he was on a World Series winner, but he hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah. No matter what you think, I mean, he's clearly one of the most gifted, talented players in the game. Just the overall scope of what he does on a baseball field is unbelievable. Yeah. But
well,
it's just not consistent in the regular season.
He's not going to be a top 10 guy. Like, I'm not saying to take him like in the second or third round.
No, yeah.
I'm saying that I think there's going to be a backlash with him next year. And I look at the raw stats and I'm like, you know what? This is somebody who still, like, is going to do enough in fantasy and in deeper mix and only that you're going to want him on your team.
All right.
Well, yeah. Another thing, Mike, real quick, is it's kind of like what you said earlier when we were talking about the valuations and not just shooting for value instead of trying to get somebody that does a little bit of everything. Like, Baez wasn't really a zero in any category. He was pretty good across the board. And if you get enough guys like that, you can take more of a risk in those stolen base categories or guys that can only do one thing. And I think, he probably is still multi-positional.
Yeah.
At least second base and shortstop.
Yep. So what you're saying is you won't have Baez remorse.
Oh my God.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
I've had such a bad influence on all of you.
You've destroyed us. I'm going to eschew the Paul DeJong power hour. Shout out to Carson Cistulli. I'm going to eschew that in favor of talking about my boy, JD Martinez. Just dingers. He earned, can you believe this? He doesn't show up on the top 5 in any of these lists because he split the leagues. He split his season. He earned $17 in the American League, and he earned $17 in the National League. So he was a $30 player. I mean, if he had spent the full season in Arizona, I mean, he might have been even higher. I mean, he might have been threatening $40. I mean, we don't know. But JD Martinez is a fantastic hitter. I don't know what people need to see. He was going in, like, the second and third rounds of these two early mocks when Giancarlo Stanton's going in the top 5 to 10 picks. I've made this point, but there's literally no difference between the two. And I'd honestly prefer Martinez. So what more do you want? He's going to, if he ends up in a place like Yankee Stadium, I mean, just think of what he could do with his opposite field power.
I don't know why you hate Giancarlo Stanton so much.
I don't hate Giancarlo. It's so frustrating to talk about him because people don't see your argument, and it can be infuriating at times. Mike knows. We talked about Stanton a lot on the last show. So, hey, if you're new, go back and listen to it. It was fun. Okay, there. I kind of freaked out there and had to talk about Giancarlo. It was weird. Let's talk some pitchers on the National League side. We'll close out there and then get to the mailbag because we actually got a lot of questions. So, Mike, Max Scherzer, and then everyone else, pretty much. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, I guess he's the interesting name here because I prefer Strasburg over Kershaw maybe at this point. Are we there yet? Because of the age and, I mean, sure, Strasburg's injury history is scary too, but Kershaw, this is a lot of missed time in the last couple of years.
That's very hipster of you, George.
Yeah, this kind of goes back to my point about Paxton, which is, I get it. Like, I get that Kershaw could throw 100 innings next year, or, you know, back injuries are scary.
There.
And, you know, look, any injury for a pitcher is scary because, you know, if once something goes wrong, it goes wrong. But, you know, Kershaw's missed 2 years in a row now because of that back. Like, there's a lot of unknowns there. I'm just not ready to do it because the other side of this is that vintage Kershaw could put up, you know, 200 innings. And, you know, if he does that, you know, we know the proposition. And, you know, the other thing I'm looking at, you know, in 2016 at 149 innings, he put up a 1.69 ERA and a 0.72 WHIP, and that's just ridiculous. And you know, this year's off year, relatively speaking, he put up a point. Yeah, go ahead.
He's kind of sucked since he came back in September.
He
kind of
had
a
bad month.
Yeah,
and you know, he's had a mediocre postseason, and yeah, I mean, there's that possibility that he could, you know, come out in 2018 and be that guy. I'm just not willing at this point to bet against him. Like he feels to me, and I'm reluctant to say this because I prefer the pitcher I'm about to compare him to. He's kind of this generation's Pedro, and that Pedro would do that too. Like Pedro would go after an injury or, you know, after he came back, he'd have a bad month.
Yeah.
And then he'd still come back the next year and be Pedro. And some of that was, Kershaw is going to do what Pedro used to do. He's going to work out this winter, and he's going to be, to the best of his ability that he can physically, he's going to try to be that elite guy. Yeah, I mean, he could slip, and that's true for almost any pitcher, though, which is why I still would bet on Kershaw over anybody, with the exception, I'd say, at this point, of Scherzer.
Well, I mean, Kershaw is going to be one of the first five starters, maybe top three starters off the board in every draft next year. I mean, well, I'm just saying, I think the ceiling is going to be lower now.
Let me ask you this then. So, who would you take definitively ahead of Kershaw without thinking about it right now? Scherzer and who else?
Kluber, probably Sale. Okay. Just because you know Sale's going to pitch all those innings. Strasburg, maybe I could talk myself into it.
Yeah, you know, I still think there's going to be people who take Kershaw one or two.
Oh yeah, no,
I'm still taking Kershaw one or two.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I think it's an interesting discussion.
No, I mean you're right. We are at the point with Kershaw, and you know, some of this is like earnings predicate how you feel about a guy going forward. I've always said like one of the best predictors of what's going to happen the next year is what happened the previous year. And, you know, Kershaw has earned under 40 now 2 years in a row. I know some of that's because of injury, but that matters. You know, whereas Scherzer has earned, and again, this is only, you know, 41 and 40. And, you know, both Sale and Kluber, it's AL, so you have to adjust. And this is where with mix, it's kind of tricky. Kind of the rough calculation with this is I subtract four off the AL pitchers, like if you're going to, you know, do environment and run context. Mm-hmm. So if you do that, you know, Kluber's still ahead of Kershaw just based off of last year, and Sale's right there. So yeah, it's tough, and I could see the inclination to want to move Kershaw down, but I'm still betting on the guy. Like I'd almost rather go down in flames with him.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Almost the other pitcher.
I'm with you. Mark, Robbie Ray, if he doesn't get hit by a line drive, I mean, is he in Scherzer territory here? Where do we see Robbie Ray? Because his finish to the season was unreal. I mean, I would text you all the time because I had a league where I traded Lindor for Robbie Ray, and for a while it wasn't looking great, and then Robbie Ray was fantastic down the stretch. So we've talked a lot about Robbie Ray just between ourselves, but the guy's awesome at this point. He's so fun.
Yeah, and the weird thing about Robbie Ray is the concerns about him heading into the season are kind of still there as far as giving up a lot of hard contact. But at a certain point, I don't care just because he strikes everybody out. And I'm okay. Like, he plays in a pretty homer-friendly park. He'll walk a few more guys than you would like, but he strikes everybody out. Like, at a certain point, that's all I need.
Yeah, 218 strikeouts in 162 innings. And what's weird is, like, we talked about this. He has starts sometimes where you can tell from the first pitch that he just doesn't have it, and it's going to be a long night. But when he's locked in and he's locating that secondary stuff, he's pretty much untouchable. It's really fun. Mike, I got to ask about Chase Anderson here, because I've seen some early 2018 content where the rankings for him are all over the place. And he actually was he graded out really well in your valuations here. But what are we doing with Chase Anderson? Because I've kind of made the point that he's pretty much been the same guy for a few years now by DRA. But what are we doing with Chase Anderson?
And I feel this way about a lot of the Brewers pitchers, and some of it's the park. You know, you mentioned Arizona. I feel like Miller does not get enough play about what a hitter's park that is, and how that impacts the pitchers there. So I like Anderson. There's just no way I'm paying this price or anything close to it. We kind of saw this last year with Zach Davies. I almost said Wade Davis because I've got playoff brain. Davies was a guy this year who, good pitcher, but you know, a lot of that benefit with him was from the wins. And there's some of that too. I know Anderson only won 12. It's not quite the same thing. I just don't have a lot of faith in pitchers in that park in terms of investing a lot in them. That isn't to say I don't want Anderson. I like him. I think the fundamentals are decent. This is just a case where I don't see him being, you know, he was a 12th best pitcher in NL only. And, you know, if you break it down by starters, you know, here, he was a top 10 guy. He was 10th. I just don't want to pay that price for him. There's a few names, like right below him, there's Carlos Martinez, there's Rich Hill. I mean, there's even Aaron Nola. There's just pitchers I'd rather have.
Yes.
That's a whole other discussion. One of these years, Aaron Nola is going to be a $30 pitcher if he can, you know, string it all together.
He's really fun to watch. Pour one out for Mike.
Hey, before we... Oh, I was going to say the exact same thing you were,
God,
I think.
God damn it. Go ahead. I know where you're going.
No, I was
going
to say, before we move on from the Brewers, I'm sad about Jimmy Nelson.
What's frustrating about it, I've never vented about this Jimmy Nelson injury, but WTF, what the hell? I mean, he gets hurt diving back into a base. It's like the stupidest injury ever. I still don't understand how it happened. I go back and I watch the video, and I just can't believe that that's how it ended for Jimmy Nelson last year. I'm really bummed about it, because this really puts his long-term future in jeopardy just based on the labrum surgery. I mean, that's about as serious as it can get, and there's not a lot of pitchers who have it. So I don't think you can touch him next year. I really don't. Even if he's coming back and he's rehabbing, until we see what he looks like, you can't draft him. And it's a shame, because he was probably a top 10 starter in the National
League.
Such
a bummer.
It sucks. Pour one out for Jimmy Nelson, because he's good, and it sucks for everyone. There, Mike, we were a year early on Jolie Chacin, huh? We talked.
Well, that. I think you were mainly a year early. I kind of had him as a streamer guy last year in a couple leagues, but yeah, he is what he is. You know, we don't want to oversell him. You know, he had a 3.9 or 3.89 ERA, but he's somebody who, you know, he pounds the zone. He gets the ball down, and when he's doing that, he generates a fair amount of grounders and, you know, keeps the ball in the park enough. That would be a good way to put it. Like Anderson, I don't necessarily want to bet on him as sustainable. And, you know, we kind of talk about like prices here. If you're, when these do come out next month, pitcher dollar values versus pitcher bids, there's such a variance there. And unless it's an elite guy, you definitely don't want to pay the sticker price.
Nope. It's weird that he earned more than Kyle Hendricks. That's odd. Just something to think about there. All right, 10 seconds or less. Mark, you get the honors.
I'm excited to see what happens with Dinelson Lamet. I think we've talked about him a little bit on a previous episode, but
yes, we did.
He was so good down the stretch, and I think that there's going to be a lot of other guys that get the quote-unquote under-the-radar buzz, and he's going to be there for the taking later in drafts, and I'm going to try and scoop him up in as many spots as I can.
Luis Castillo will go higher in drafts, but I'm convinced Lamet's probably going to be maybe better as a fantasy option next year. That might be a controversial take, but given where they're going to go, I'm with you on Lamet. Mike, who you got?
God, I really like Lamet too, just to say that. So another guy, you know, I mentioned is Baez. I'm going to go with a year late and maybe not underrated because some people still like him. John Gray.
Oh, you know, yes.
More than a strikeout an inning, you know, he kept the walks down. Slider is a sick pitch. And, you know, we saw this when, you know, well, you guys are probably too young to have seen this, but the slider in Coors is a powerful pitch. It really, I think it was Bruce Ruffin in the 90s when he was closing for them. He was just not much of a pitcher before that. He was a closer for the Rockies in the 90s.
I was barely alive.
And the slider, yeah, I know. The slider was his bread and butter pitch, and people had the same reaction, like, Bruce who? Or I remember that guy. He was like a crappy starter with the Phillies. But that pitch works in Coors, and it's not like Gray is, you know, even a mediocre guy like Ruffin who is, you know, surviving off an okay slider. He has the potential, if he can give you 180 innings, to be an elite guy. And I know the Coors, like prejudice has kind of gone away for the most part because there's some other decent pitchers there. But I could see Gray being a top 15 guy or even higher, I should say starter in NL only. And the innings and the raw stats and I think that familiarity are going to keep his price down.
He started throwing his curveball more the last doing it more this summer.
He did. That's true. And I noted that somewhere.
He missed time this year because he had a weird injury. He jumped to catch a one hopper and he broke his foot. Like it was, so it wasn't arm related. So that's the good news with Gray. And
those injuries tend to suppress the price because people don't, like, come February or March, people don't really think about that. They just look at the innings and go, oh, you know, injured starter, right? You know, he's a risk, and he really isn't.
And he got
wasn't it really early too?
Yeah, like April 12th or something like that.
Yeah, so he kind of started out behind the eight ball. Like, I'm giving him a pass for this season's inning total.
That's a good point. I mean, he might be a good value because, number one, you can play that up, the injury missed time, Coors, and then he got absolutely shelled in that wild card game too. So I don't think he made it out of the first inning. So you have some reasons that people might be concerned about him, that you can maybe sneak him through for less than he should. That was way longer than 10 seconds, but I'll allow it. Alex Wood, I have some serious concerns about him now. The velocity. I think Harry Pavlidis tweeted this out, that his average fastball velocity, I mean, it looks like a roller coaster going down. I don't know. I mean, he was hitting 94, 95 at times early in the year. I mean, he started out, he was like 14-0 to start the year. And the second half, I mean, he had missed time. He was less effective. You're going to look at his season and go, wow, this guy is incredible. He had, 150 strikeout per inning, didn't walk guys. But I'd be concerned about him. If the fastball velocity isn't up in spring training, I don't know if I want him. I just think you're gonna take a loss there. It's not going to be fun. I don't know. All right, guys. So that does it for the valuations. Mike, those are going up in November, right? on the
site? Yeah, those usually go up like they start up the second week in November. I put up two a week right before the playoffs, and they get rolled out like with a break over Thanksgiving over the course of 3 weeks.
Okay, awesome. So everybody should go check those out, and let's go to the Twitter mailbag. Let's check in. We actually got a ton of questions today, so I know we've been on like a hiatus for about a month now, but it's good to be back, and thank you to everybody who sent in questions. This first one is from Brett P. He wants to know, what do you expect from Rhys Hoskins next year? Oh, God. Mike, you should probably take this one.
I like Hoskins. I the power's legitimate. You know, he's you know, I think Matt Winkelman, you know, who I don't want to call him a friend of the show, but we all follow him on Twitter, you know, Phillies minor league. We love the guy. You know, he's kind of talked about how the adjustments Hoskins made at Double A were legitimate, and it just took everybody a lot of time to accept him. Because when you look at the 2015 edition of Hoskins, he was just a guy. And it was just somebody who he hit some home runs, but he didn't do much else. And people looked at Redding and they're like, yeah, that's a hitter's park. You know, the balls fly out of the park there. But then it held in AAA, and I think we should have been on board with him. Look, the average, it already dropped with the Phillies in 2017, and that could be a problem. But Hoskins' approach, and he kind of reminds me of Judge in this way. His approach is just not to get cheated and not to swing at bad balls. And that's going to continue with Hoskins. So I still see 35, 40 home runs out of him next year. Average is where there's some risk with him and you want to be careful a little bit, but I'm still willing to draft him pretty high and take a risk on him next year. I'm not an elite hitter by any means, but someone I believe enough in.
I think the plate discipline insulates the floor enough that he's not going to be a total washout. You know what I mean? There's not like total bust risk here.
Yeah, I kind of ramble there a little bit. That's a better way to put it, is that there's enough with the plate discipline and with what he does with each at bat that I don't see him like Matt Olson, for example, would be a guy that I'd have less faith in and look at like, yeah, you know, if Matt Olson hits 210 next year and is bad enough over the course of like a month or two, he could disappear. That's not going to happen with Hoskins.
Yeah. It reminds me of like Jock. I mean, Mark, have we talked about this? But like Jock Peterson, just the plate skills are just not good. And his plate discipline's poor. And that's where you get risky with prospects sometimes, I think. So Hoskins is the opposite of that. So that's a. There we go. Mark, we've talked about Byron Buxton a lot, but Thunder Snow at DW the original wants to know what we think of Byron Buxton for next year. We talked about a lot in the free agent watches towards the end of the year, but Byron Buxton's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely talked about him several weeks in a row just because it seemed like nobody was quite buying in or they weren't buying in enough. But he's one of those guys that it seems like he starts slow every year and then kind of comes on later. You're always going to have the injury risk, just the way he plays. And it's almost not skill-wise, but kind of like a Ken Griffey Jr. where he's prone to run into the wall at any time, just based on that center field defense. But he's a guy that I could see being good next year, like 265, 270 maybe. He strikes out a lot, but he showed at the end of the season that that's feasible, and he's got the power. He's going to steal a lot of bases. He could be one of those guys that that you could kind of sneak in there in the middle of the draft and get those across-the-board numbers.
Yeah, I think he's going to be pretty pricey. A lot of people are going to like – I like that he became a much more efficient base stealer. I think that's a really good thing for his profile going forward, where even if he misses time or he doesn't run as much, he's still going to give you what you want. He's not going to get thrown out a bunch of times. So
he got thrown out once this year.
Yeah, he's really good on the base paths. Next question, Rich at rbenny43. He wants to know if we like Jose Martinez, the Cardinals version of Jose Martinez. Does he have a starting spot entering 2018? Thanks. I'll open this up to anyone because I don't have any thoughts on Jose Martinez. None.
Not really. I don't really like Jose Martinez that much.
It's a weird profile.
Yeah. You know, my feeling about Martinez is that it feels like a fourth outfielder profile as opposed to a starter. And, you know, the Cardinals have a lot of guys who, you know, fall into that bucket. You know, and look, I know what the numbers say last year. You know, he hit 309, he hit 14 home runs and all over 300 plate appearances. And there's that other aspect, whether you want to call it Cardinals devil magic or good, you know, sound developmental process, you feel like he could exceed that. So what I'm saying right now could wind up looking or feeling foolish. But I'd rather not gamble on a Martinez. I'd rather get somebody like that late. And if he works out, you're like, great, you know, I got Jose Martinez and, you know, what a find, as opposed to betting on a repeat performance.
Yep. This next question is from Walt Maluchnik at NJFan76. He says, Luis Castillo will be a thing this offseason. By the time drafts come around, he will be so overhyped, he'll be undrafted. No question there, just lamenting. And I'll add, we'll probably be Denelson lamenting all offseason during drafts. That was my comment at the end.
Nothing more to add to that one. I feel like we hit it earlier, and you just hit it out of the park with just some fantastic wordplay.
Yeah, it's always difficult to predict which players or pitchers will get the helium, but yeah, I feel like he will.
We had this a few years ago with Raisel Iglesias. The exact same thing happened. He got insanely hyped by everyone just because it was an obvious guy. We're going to get there with Castillo at some point. Let's see. Which guys ended the year? This is from Davin Brown. He sent us a bunch, but I'm going to do this one. What guys ended the year as setup men that you think will be closers to start 2018? It's always tough to predict these, but he gives us a couple names. Kinsler, Addison Reed, Kyle Barraclough, no. Any of those guys or anybody? I think Blake Treinen's a guy who I think is kind of going under the radar for Oakland. He's going to be there.
Wasn't he already getting saves, though? Like, I always like
size is the guy. People stop paying attention, and they miss that. I don't know. Just saying.
Yeah. I don't know if I like any of those names as potential closers.
Kyle Barraclough sucks. I'm just going to say it. He can't.
Oh, you're off team Barraclough?
He can't throw strikes. I don't. What do you do? You just don't swing the bat. He'll walk in runs. It's pretty bad. I don't know. He was terrible in September. No way to sugarcoat that. He just sucked. Sorry,
I'm,
Kyle.
I'm just kind of looking at the list here. I don't really see one obvious.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Next question, Will Harris. Outlook for catcher. Willie's Wisdom is his handle, which I think is like, and it's a good handle. That's funny.
Next level. Well done.
Peak Willie there. Outlook for catchers is dismal in deep two catcher leagues for 2018. Do guys like Austin Barnes, Francisco Mejia, and Jorge Alfaro offer hope, or simply delay the trip to Arby's? That's a good question. You guys, I responded to him. I said, do you remember Tom Murphy? Remember when that was a thing? That was fun. I hate catchers.
I kind of think Austin Barnes is one that has some legs. Like, he's getting all the playing time in the playoffs. Like, he could be, he could at least get a better split of the starts next season, because Grandal is always hurt. But he's getting all the reps right now, so I think he could definitely see a bigger role next year.
I'm on the same page. Barnes of those guys is the guy. You know, I'll say about Alfaro, I think he could be fine in real life. I just don't like the fantasy profile. Like, you're looking at kind of a poor man's Mike Zunino with a bad average and not enough power to justify it.
Fun stat, by true average, Austin Barnes was the best hitting catcher in baseball last year. Now, he didn't get the playing time that a guy like Buster Posey did, but he was really good on a per plate appearance basis, and that factors in on base, so just keep that in mind. I just go get Gary Sanchez and don't worry about catcher.
Isn't Grandal a free agent this winter, or am I missing something?
I don't think he is. No.
Okay. I could be wrong. I'm just unless Cots
already. Well, that's correct.
Well, you know, it's possible Kotz already updated the service time, in which case he has another year, and that's what I'm tripping up on.
I think I don't know. I can look real quick. But no, I thought that he was the guy that got extended.
Yeah, well, they might not have that. No, you know what? He's not on. He would be, even if he wasn't extended, he's 2019. So what it looks like, Kotz already updated the service time for this past year. So that's what I'm mistaking. So yeah, he's got another year.
All right. So CJ wants to know, what are you expecting from Alex Reyes as he returns next year? I would not be expecting a lot, just because he hadn't thrown a ton of innings before surgery. And like, he was already a guy we weren't expecting to throw, I think, 150 innings already. So coming off Tommy John, I wouldn't be. He's probably not going to start the year in the rotation. So insane talent, but there's a lot of concerns there that we're not going to know the answer to yet. All right, we'll do two more. This one's from Scott. After Kyle Schwarber's slow start, I was wondering if rust is a thing for hitters. Do you think a guy like Adam Eaton will suffer from that? He also asked about Jung Ho Kang, but he's never coming back, I don't think. Are we worried about Adam Eaton next year, Mark, coming off a knee surgery, if he's going to start slow?
Yeah, I'd probably be a little worried, just kind of for the same reasons as Schwarber. Like, it turns out when you miss a whole year when you're a young player, it's really hard to, you know, hit baseballs. But I guess at least Eaton had some experience before that, so maybe not quite to the extreme of Schwarber, but you're always worried a little bit when you just miss an entire season. I think it took AJ Pollock a little bit of time when he had that elbow injury to you know, get back into the swing of things and start looking sort of like AJ Pollock again this season. So
my thing about Eaton is I really like him as, like, I like him as a baseball player much more as, or more than as a fantasy player. And given the nature of the injury, it's not to say that he'll never run again, but I could see the Nationals being pretty cautious with him and putting the brakes on and be like, yeah, you know what? Like, we're not going to run you much in the first half. And it's not like that's a big part of his value, but it's enough of his value that you're like, okay, well, if I'm getting the Adam Eaton who hits 15 home runs and steals like five bases, I just don't see how valuable that is. And I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but it's just something to keep in mind.
This question is from at George Bissell. He wants to know, Adam Eaton or Ronald Acuna next year? Serious
Ronald
question.
Ronald Acuna.
I think it might be Acuna. I'm not even kidding.
It very well might be, and certainly Eaton will go higher.
Oh yeah.
But if Acuna has the, you know, earns more at the end of the year, I won't be. I'd be surprised. I won't be shocked.
Just saying, folks. He's if you don't know about Ronald Acuna right now, please research. There's a lot of stuff out there. Final one. This is just because I like this question, we'll do it. It's from Bill McKnight at WJM37. This is a great question. Who will be the 2017 Ryan Schimpf in 2018 after having a 2016 Ryan Schimpf type season in 2017? I have a pretzel in my head. I just reading it gave me an ice cream headache.
It's a great question, though.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make
Go ahead. No, I get the thread. I mean, I think what you're trying to find is you're trying to find a high power, high strikeout guy who did it in like half a season or a little bit more that we don't really trust, you know, in 2018.
I have a name.
Okay.
Rougned Odor.
Yeah, okay. I mean, except I think we're already down on Odor. You know, the guy that I'm kind of looking at, and, you know, Cubs fans are going to yell at me, and I know is just singing Javi Baez's praises, Ian Happ. I could see it's not as extreme, and I think Happ will be fine. I could just see him, you know, based on that batted ball profile, I could see him taking a step back in 2018, and it won't be as radical as Schimpf. And I'm trying to come up with this on the fly, but that's a guy I could see slipping.
Mark, do you have anybody that you think?
No, I keep just I'm still trying to figure out the question. I still have Finkel is Einhorn like dancing in my head. Steven Souza? I don't know. We talked about him earlier.
Steven Souza kind of has a little bit of a track record, though. It's kind of like my Odor call.
Eugenio Suarez?
He actually might be good, though.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too. I'm just looking at the leaderboard right now and trying to pick out some names.
You know who I'd say might fit this, actually? Like, he didn't play in the regular season, really. But, like, Greg Bird strikes me as, like, a guy like this. Like, he's going to have some years that are going to look good, and then years where I just don't think you're going to get anything.
Well, you know, the other guy who probably jumps out is another Padre, and I like this guy, but Hunter Renfro. Like, Hunter Renfro has a profile where he could hit 40 home runs and, like, be a monster. He could also, like, hit 180 and disappear. Like, I think that's the profile that, you know, that this question is talking about. And maybe he's a better example than Hap. Like, just somebody where you're like, okay, well, you know, Ryan Schimpf could have been good. Like, he could have been a decent enough player even with the bad batting average, but he wasn't. And that's kind of what I look at with Renfro. Now, Renfro has a higher scouting profile, and I'm not saying this definitely will happen, but if you're trying to guess who that will happen to, he's as good a guess as any.
Aren't we overlooking the most obvious name, though? Like, isn't Joey Gallo that guy? Like, he could just get benched if he's just not hitting for power at all. And I don't know. Are we that sold that Joey Gallo is just, this is who he is and he's going to play from now on? I don't know. I'm just wondering.
Well, what do you think about Adam Duvall? Like, he had a renaissance in the first half, but was just so bad in the second half.
Still got 2 years in a row.
That's a good one.
I guess my
Jake
thing
Lamb's
Gallo,
a little bit like that too. Jake Lamb's had some weird second halves, man.
What was Gallo's walk percentage? And I'm kind of looking at this now. So
it's pretty good. Dude, what about Logan Morrison?
Yeah, he's older, but I
could
see
know.
It.
Ugh, I don't think he's getting to 40 home runs again.
Check out Yonder Alonso's. This isn't relevant to the question, but check out Yonder Alonso's like stats, like in the second half.
Yeah, he might actually be the guy. Yep. No, I'm there. You might be. I think it's Yonder Alonso. He just might not be playing. He said while dropping his phone on the ground. that's the mic drop we needed. Sorry, Yonder. I know we loved you in April, but things have taken a turn. All right, guys. That's going to do it. So for the purposes of this show, we'll take a quick break, come back, and wrap it up. For listening to episode 151 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Just a reminder, you can subscribe today to Baseball Prospectus. Check out our brand new website, the newly launched redesign. It is up, baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe. That's how you can read all of our off-season content. We have the playoff prospectus columns going up. We have like 2 to 3 pieces a day just on the playoffs alone. A lot of great content being churned out by the entire staff who are not only doing this, but we are all working on the BP annual as well, which is going to come out next year. And I think it comes out, January, February-ish? February? Something like that. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but I'm excited for it. It's going to be cool. And that's pretty much it for us, guys. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Mark is at Hoodie and Ty, and I am at George Bissell. We're going to be back in 2 weeks. I don't know what we're going to do yet for the show, but we'll keep you posted on Twitter. If you follow all of us, we'll tweet out updates here and there. But hope everybody has a great rest of the playoffs if your team is still in it. It's looking like – what do you guys think? Is it going to be Dodgers-Yankees? What do we think? Prediction time.
well.
Yes.
The Dodgers, I mean, the Dodgers are up 7-0, like, as we're recording this.
Wow, so, okay.
I mean, unless the Cubs forget the series, unless they stage an epic comeback, yes. I have to say Yankees, just because even if Verlander is the man again in Game 6, the Astros are going to have a crazy bullpen game, in all likelihood, in Game 7. So,
all right, so
yeah, it looks like Dodgers-Yankees.
So Dodgers-Yankees, who are you taking to win it? Which the TV ratings will be insane for this series, by the way.
Probably the Dodgers, just because they have such a deep team, and this assumes that Seager's back.
Yeah, Mark. Seager's back, I'm going Dodgers. If Seager's not back, I'm probably still going slightly Dodgers. So it didn't change too much.
They're coming for you.
Yep.
That's not me. I'm like in the suburbs.
No, that's me. That's me. They wanted to make sure I was picking the Dodgers.
They heard that hot take and they thought, man, get this guy to a hospital. he just burned himself really badly. I want to take the Dodgers so badly, but there's a little part of me that feels like somehow the Yankees win this thing. I don't know why, but I feel it.
I want the Dodgers, but here's this fear I have, and I have this fear about the Nationals too, which is like Dodgers fans get really like chirpy sometimes, and this is for a team that hasn't won the World or been to the World Series in like almost 30 years. So I have this fear that if they win the World Series, you're just never going to hear the end of it next year. Whereas the Yankees, you're kind of like, yeah, Yankee fans are annoying, but they're always annoying, and like it's just one more World Series for them to brag about, so it won't be piling on to the annoyance.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
No, it does.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
This Yankee team, I mean, they don't look rattled by anything. It's really fun to watch.
It's interesting. If they win this series, they'll be the third team in history to have come back down 2-0 in 2 best-of-7s. And the others were the 85 Royals, who really essentially won because of a horrible call in the World Series, and the 81 Dodgers, who there was only a second series like that because of the strike.
Yep.
So yeah, you're, and then that was the other stat. This would be the sixth team in the current alignment to beat 200 win teams in the playoffs. So yeah, you're talking about an amazing run. And if they beat the Dodgers, they'll beat 3 100 win teams in the playoffs, which nobody has done, but I could see them doing it. Like you're right. There's nothing. It feels right now like there's nothing this Yankee team can't do. And we know how this works. If the Dodgers like do play them and sweep them, we'll look back and be like, yeah, you know, the Dodgers were better. But if the Yankees win in 5 or 6, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah. It just
feels like that kind of year.
No, I mean,
and I like to straddle the fence and say nothing like I just did. But, I mean, seriously, like you could see either outcome.
I could see. I still think the Dodgers are going to win it. They're clearly the better team, top to bottom, talent wise. I think, but this Yankee team, man, I would not rule them out. So I don't think any of us are. So it just would not shock me if the Yankees pulled this off. There's a little part of me that's like, I think they might do it. So hey. We'll find out. Maybe we'll have a show before the end of the World Series. Maybe not. So we'll see who's right on the next episode of Flags Fly Forever. For Mike Gianella and Mark Barry, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. And until our next show, so long, everybody.